Welcome to the Back Bar Podcast. This is episode number, John, tell me, what are we on, four?
Four.
Welcome to episode four then. We're going to be joined later today by the one and only Tam Cowan. But before we get into that, we'll probably do a little host hangout. We have the usual suspects on board, myself, Ali McLeod, known by many as Skywalker. We have Johnny Red Gemmel with us as well.
Hello.
And bringing up the rear, as always, is Martin Mini James. So, yes, welcome, gents.
How's it going?
Number four, not bad. How are you guys?
I am wonderful.
Top. Just being with Skywalker, I actually just finished watching The Mandalorian. And not to give away any spoilers, but some Skywalker-related stuff in there, and it was uncanny.
Thanks,
uncanny. It made me like it even more because your wee face was in it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like I'm called Skywalker, but I'm not really a big Star Wars or is Star Wars or Star Trek. I can't remember.
Jesus Star Wars.
I'm not really a big fan.
You're not Skywalker anymore. You're just Alistair.
Mark Hamill.
That's what I know. I'm in trouble if I'm getting called Alistair. But it's Star Wars.
I just wait until I throw that middle name in there.
But as long as I don't get look like Mark Hamill now, it's fucking looking old.
Yeah, anyway, can we just move on from this bit before we have to answer honestly?
Yeah, probably a good idea.
So what's been happening? Anything exciting?
What's been happening?
I went out of the back garden yesterday.
Yeah, my son flooded the bathroom today. That's about it.
Lockdown.
Yeah. I bought a bike.
With no wheels.
No.
Technically, aye.
I believe the term is a stationary exercise bike.
All right, okay. How's your arse?
In bits. And then I went in a bike.
did you remember to put the saddle on?
I mean, it's more fun without. This is the last chance saloon to get into some relative shape when things start opening up, because running's fell on its arse, the gym and doing exercise in the house fell on its arse, diet fell on its arse. So this is my salvation, this bike. This is it.
Or else it's double XLs.
I'm just gonna live in shorts and ponchos for the rest of my life, man.
Dresses, just walking about like Jack Black.
Shorts, ponchos, and flip flops.
I think you'd suit a poncho.
I think you could suit a poncho over your face.
Cool. So this host hangout thing. We had
a few questions that are thrown away.
Social media, to our thousands and thousands of followers across all our various social media channels. So Instagram and Twitter, we got a good number. I think we've got like five or something. So
five or six good ones.
Because I think some of them are actually quite interesting, despite some of the people that mentioned that I wasn't expecting much, but some of them are actually relatively good.
Must have fell in my head that day.
So I'm going to kick us off, right? This was raised to us by, I'm not even going to give his Insta name, Goggles is his nickname to us, but basically he asked the question, and this is when, as soon as I seen his name and saying that he commented on something, I was fearing the worst, to be honest. But he actually asked a relatively okay question for him. So what he said was, if you could look like any of your mates, who would it be and why? So I'm going to go to Ali first on this one.
I struggled with this as well.
Obviously, it doesn't need to just be within the three of us.
I've got more than two friends.
Don't have two friends.
Still?
podcast together.
I don't know where they are yet. They're out there somewhere.
We're just podcast partners.
Yeah, so I struggled with this because I thought I was...
Do you think all your pals are ugly or something?
Well, no, I couldn't guess between them all, because I think it's the individual qualities of certain ones that I like. So I was going to throw it out the box and actually just pick certain qualities and then build myself like an avatar.
In no way surprises me that you're building yourself the perfect guy.
This has been
38 years in the making for you, man, designing your perfect man.
Did you plant this question from Goggles?
I know, that's it. I was like, don't ask that so I can just say, So yeah, so I struggled with it, but then I thought I'll go with an easy answer. I've always wondered what it would be like to be sort of super tall, and we've got two friends from rugby, Phil Nicol and Stuart Pollock, and there are 1.69 and 1.68 or something like that. So I think I'm going to pick either one of those because I just thought what it must be like to like walk into like the head of of a door. So, yeah, so I'll pick, I'd like to be super tall.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so Phil Nichol. Good. Gable, same question to you.
Yeah, so I had a bit of a think about this, and also you lads know I've only got one sibling, it's a sister, so you can't really compare how handsome or how good looking you are compared to your sister, really. I would like to be known to be able to compare myself to a brother. I'd like to be the handsome brother, so Alan McLeod.
Motherfucker. I swear to God, we are definitely podcast associates now.
That was purely just to wind you up, and it worked.
It didn't work.
It didn't work.
No, definitely not.
Alistair McLeod has left the call. Yes,
so I'm just going to change
your
actually, name.
My genuine answer was actually purely because I've noticed during the lockdown there's been a few more grey hairs and wrinkles appearing. So I was thinking Gary Emmons, who seems to have figured out the secret of looking continually 25.
I like that one.
So yeah, I want Gary's youthfulness.
That's it. He's like the Indiana Jones, goes and finds the...
Yeah, the thing that makes him young. Aye, that
that's him.
The Jesus finds thing. Gary Emmons.
Indiana Jones just drank Gary. I think that's that's a movie nobody wants.
That's a different movie.
Yeah, let's move it along.
Okay, no, Martin James.
Who did you pick?
I found this a bit of a struggle as well. Probably for different reasons for Ali, because I could have chosen them all. Obviously, I'm not the tallest guy in the world, right? We're just...
So basically, any
of my mates, because they're all taller, and they get to go on the big boy rides. So
what about Coco? Who's bigger between you and Coco?
Well, define bigger.
Oof. Okay, let's go. Well, are you in that bracket already?
Coco's taller. Coco's
pizza
taller.
Pocket fired.
There's about a half inch in it. So if you give me a rub, I'm the same height. But either way, I wanted to be tall as well, but also I wanted to have a really good metabolism, because at the moment, if I look at a chicken nugget, my ass jiggles for 2 weeks. So like, obviously your brother would fall into that category, because the guy eats anything he wants. But just calm down. But I'm actually going to go with, and I hate having to say this because his head's big enough, I'm probably going to go with fish.
He's probably the
fittest guy I know, and you know, it's been, when I say a long time, I mean my whole life, when I've never been able to look down and feel a six pack. And at the moment, I'm feeling like an economy pack. So I think it'd be really nice to be able to feel relatively tall, absolutely chiseled, and be able to go running and do like a 10K in half an hour and all that nonsense that he does. So sadly,
I don't think he's had a cheat meal in his life, though. Like, it's not about his lifestyle.
It's about who he looked like, and it's not for his head, because he looks like that guy from WandaVision, Vision, him. But I would definitely go with if I could get a torso, it'd be him, and facially, I don't know.
Stick with what I've got.
That'll do me.
I'll pick the next one. This one seems like a simple question, but I'm quite intrigued by the answers. Bacon roll, is it ketchup or brown sauce, or is there an alternative? I'll go with
more bacon.
I'll go, Mr. James.
I'm going to go with brown sauce for our own bacon. Tomato sauce, man. Brown sauce, nah. There's no discussion. Just brown sauce, mate.
Yeah, I think I'm the exact. I'm the same. I'm brown sauce.
Okay. What are you, John?
I don't like brown sauce at all. Actually, a bacon roll would just be butter. Just get the crispy bacon on there straight away, so it melts the butter a bit.
But what about...
But if you have it on toast, lime, marmalade and butter with bacon is fucking
light
dynamite.
Again, lime marmalade in the cupboard?
I know, that's exactly.
The shops have it.
If you put it on pancakes, you can put maple syrup on it.
Right, now, yeah, that's true.
That sounds more like what the road that's I would so go good. Down.
Yeah, actually waffles and bacon and maybe some chicken.
margaritas.
I can see how my Saturday is going to go.
The next one we'll go for is, if you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be and why? And we'll go to you first, Gemmell.
I would live in Chicago.
Just so I can hang out with my pal Mike Finney.
He lives in Indianapolis, it's like 4 hours south.
It's the same as America.
No, but see,
there's not a lot of violence in Chicago right now.
Well, I don't know. When I've been, it's nice, but it's
you're gonna live in the rich neighborhood.
I live in it, yeah, it's not nice, but I grew up in Giffen, like, I'm not going to any fucking suite.
On suite or no deal.
Exactly. How many on suites has this property got? 3. Okay, I can deal with that. But yeah, you get like a proper summer, you get a proper winter. It's right in the lake with beaches, sports teams for pretty much every sport. Yeah, I think it ticks all the boxes. So yeah, Chicago for me.
Okay, what about you, Ali?
Penthouse flat in Vegas.
Is this you now, or is this where you want to live right now?
Right now. Well, I said that, like, I don't think I take the kids with me. I just have to Skype.
Is the flight booked?
That's where I'm right now.
I'm not even going to bother. We'll not even bother covering the why. We'll just leave that as a implied.
You just need to make sure you can stay there more than one night before.
I brought my own bouncer.
Please tell me it's me. I'll come.
Can I stay with you?
And then you, Jamesy, what are you saying?
Well, I've got two options, right? So, big fan of Friday Night Lights, and I think see that whole like rural Texas, like Odessa in Texas, or something where, you know, you've got all this space and it's always really hot, and you know, if you're a 16-year-old superstar quarterback, it'd be amazing. So that would be my first one. But the thing is,
quarterbacks need to be tall, right?
Yeah.
No, they don't. No, they don't. Show me where that's written. So, joke's on you. So, this is hypothetical anyway, right? So, this is when I'm 6'2" anyway. So, right, so...
There's a lot of hypothetical in this.
If I was 16 and a quarterback there, I'm not. So, I would actually probably go with New Zealand, because quite similar to you, Gemmelins, that you've got good summers, good winters, you've got beaches, you've got, you know, you've got absolutely everything there, but... The culture, the people, the dedication to sport and stuff like that, it's just a really cool place. So, mm-hmm. Okay. Whereabouts New Zealand, I don't know. Probably just somewhere cool. So that'd be it for me.
Next one. What's your favourite sports stadium and why? And it was specified that we're not allowed to pick an Old Firm venue, which I think for the three of us means we kind of pick Parkhead. So,
yeah.
I'm going to go to Mr. Alistair Rory McLeod first.
So this was quite an easy one for me. It was the first sport venue I ever went to, and I forget the name of it, but it was when I lived in South Africa. We went to Durban to where the Natal Sharks were playing, This was in 1994 or 1995, I think, roughly.
You say you forgot the name of it. It's given how much you use Google to creep on our guests, you couldn't have thought to...
To Google it. I know that
called the Johnson Kings Park.
I don't think it was called that then, though. It was Natal versus Transvaal at the time, which was now it's like the Gauteng Lions or something like that. But anyway, we were from Transvaal was obviously where Johannesburg was, and that was the province. So my dad had got like these box tickets to go to the cup final, the Currie Cup final, and it was the Sharks versus the Lions, or the Natal versus Transvaal at the time. And I was only, what would I be, maybe 12 at most then, and we ended up in these box seats, and we just ate biltong all day and drank Coca-Cola. It was just the best atmosphere. I grew up in a tiny village in the middle of nowhere, so being in a city for a start and then being in this huge stadium, it was always something cool. I remember.
Yeah, what about you, Jamesy?
I'd narrowed it down to 4. Luckily,
just the 4.
I was going to go with the first one I ever went to, but luckily we weren't to mention Old Firm, and my dad was a big Rangers fan, so he actually took me to my first ever game, was actually a Rangers game.
Okay.
But I have to discount that, which is cool. So there's a couple. So obviously the Twickenham game for Scotland, the draw with England, the 38-38 game.
Oh,
yeah. But in fairness, I was absolutely out of my bin, and I didn't even know it was a draw until the next day. but that was like, I had to read BBC News and met the guys later on. I was like, what a result, man. I can't believe that.
Did you hear we got a draw?
So, like, I got lost in the stadium and everything. But anyway, so there's obviously Al Lang Stadium in Tampa for the Tampa Bay Rowdies, and seeing Coco giving one of their players a bottle of Bucky was a highlight. I think, and it narrows down to 2, so there was Olympic Stadium in Rome that I went to with the school to watch Roma play Brescia, and there was this absolute idiot from my school, I wouldn't be too rude, this girl unnamed, but she was standing on a chair telling us all to calm down because the Brescia fans were at the glass partition right beside us, so they were all rattling the window and we were shouting stuff back at them, and she stood up in a chair and she's like, guys, can you all just calm down? And one of their fans launched a drink over the partition and scalped her, man. It was funny. It was absolutely brilliant. Like, we were all cheering the Brescia fans and says, but I think I'm going to go with Eden Park, where we went over to, we ended up watching New Zealand beat Australia in the Bledisloe Cup just before the 2011 World Cup, and the atmosphere was amazing. It was just a brilliant game. It was all mixed seating, so all the Australia fans were beside us. They were really good banter, and our tour guide for the day, Kiwi, original nickname, he was absolutely out his bin as well, and it was every time they were trying to take a kick, he was screaming abuse at them, so that was a really good experience. So I'll go with Eden Park. I'll go with Eden Park.
That's like a good one. Okay, and John, you?
I've kind of got a few as well. One of them relates to my answer and where I'd want to live. So Wrigley Park, the home of the Chicago Cubs baseball. It is basically just a massive outdoor beer garden.
Yeah.
The fact that there's baseball going on is kind of incidental to the day.
Mm-hmm.
You're just sitting there with your mates, having a few beers, maybe a hot dog, burger, some nachos, maybe all three actually. see how the day's going. It's in a great area of Chicago as well. Like, literally just walk out and there's bars everywhere, so like the post-match stuff is amazing. Then Murrayfield, like the atmosphere actually at Murrayfield the last few years in Scotland have actually been winning games has been unreal.
It's always the national anthem at the beginning,
in particular the one game I remember, I think I was there with you, Minnie.
The Scotland New Zealand game where Doddy
Weir came out with the ball,
yeah.
And the lights went, it was because it was an evening kickoff and the winter lights went out and you kind of had the in the dark, the national anthem was incredible.
It was such a close game, that one as well.
Yeah, that was the one where Hogg got tackled kind of just short in the corner, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
And then the other one was actually the Sydney Olympic Stadium when I was there for the Scotland-France game in the 2003 World Cup. I mean, Scotland got absolutely fucking hosed by about 30 or 40 points. But it was such an amazing day out. And just because you're at the World Cup, you've got people from every nationality there. It's not just Scotland and France fans.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the before and after, and the stadium itself is a brilliant stadium as well. But I think between the three of them, I think I'd have to go Murrayfield and Scotland are winning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Patriotic.
Yeah.
I can see where you're going with the baseball stadium. I went to Yankee Stadium. Myself and Lauren did that on like our honeymoon thing. And it's such a good day. Like, it was absolute sunny day as well, and I said, you're just sitting there with like beers, and like I think it was like Derek Jeter's like last game or something as well. So like the place was rammed, and there was just a Derek Jeter.
I'll throw it. It's not the number one, but it probably in my top sort of 5-10. The Melbourne Cricket Ground.
Oh, cricket's a good laugh.
It's like kind of similar to baseball. You just sit there boozing all day, and then every now and then you're like, when did they score 200 runs? Cool. Nice one. And especially in Australia, they've got the bookies built into the stadium, so you can just wander out your seat and go down and place a few bets on the horses, back up, have a few more beers, and then that's amazing.
The only one we've missed out is the Melrose Sevens.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty good too.
Class as well.
Yeah. £60 was it? Was £60-£70 taxi back from Gala that night?
Right, that's right. None of us had money. Except Gary.
Cheers, guys.
It's like four hand jobs for that taxi driver.
Thank God for Gary.
That's for us.
Couple more questions. So,
next question we've got. There's two remaining ones. A quickie, so we'll get that over with. First was is Gemmell actually made of chocolate due to the number of injuries that he's had? And is there any examples of when you've been injured? So,
any examples?
Yes.
Are we just going to do a separate episode on that?
No, those are the two that stood out. In fact, I actually mentioned one of them before, is when you get knocked out in that, or you get a head knock in the tackle when you weren't even in the tackle. But the other one was at Dumfries.
Four concussions in three tackles.
I came on at half time. I came on the first half.
Oh, right, okay, well, whatever. Sorry, I don't have the minute that's written down, mate. But the fact is, within 5 minutes of you coming on, a rock moved away and you were lying there. Then it happened later on, and it happened later on. The referee's like, you need to take him off the pitch. He's had a long head knock. So for me, that was the one. And then, like, even try to stop you boozing on the way back up because there was potential concussion issues. That was a that was one for me. That,
I think, that I think in fairness, yes, just to call them potential concussion issues is, yeah.
The fact that your left eye was in your right eye was probably a given. Or your left eye was looking at your right eye.
It's one of these things, knowing more about the impact of head knocks and stuff like that now, I'm like, I probably shouldn't have done that. Probably after the first one where the ref... I remember the first one happening. Well, I don't kind of remember it happening, but I remember coming up for it and the ref taking a look at me, and it was, I think it was just before half-time. And he was like, right, he can't play on. He needs to go off. And I went off and we were a man down because we'd only had like two subs. So half-time, I was like, it's fine. I'll just come back on and fucking sparkle out like Bambi on ice. It's good times, so great times.
Yeah, that's it. And change it for the world.
But yeah, I am made of chocolate, so yeah. That's the answer to the question.
Okay. So the last question was raised by this really handsome guy. If you were to class yourself as any member of the Entourage cast, who would it be? And then also, for the other ones, who would they be? It's an anonymous question. It's an anonymous question.
That feels like that you're winding me up again. I feel like this is targeted abuse.
It's not all about you, Ali.
It feels like it.
It's not all about you. But okay, on that note, we'll just start with you then. So who would you class yourself as, first of all?
I think I'm more of an Ari Gold. I'm the power suit guy. You know? Look at his face.
So, like, what's your
funny guy, bit of a temper. You know, yeah, I can see myself as an Ari Gold.
Okay. So, who would Gemmell be?
Oh, who would Gemmell be? He's probably more of an E. Yeah, he's E. He's the business guy.
And who does that make me? Careful.
Well, you're best friends with him on Twitter now since you're tweeting. I think you're a turtle guy. You're a turtle guy.
Okay.
That's it. You're the cash, you know. It's a cool guy. Don't smoke weed or nothing like that. But yeah, you're cool. You're cool.
Okay, thank you. Right, okay. Gemmell, who do you think you are?
I'd probably put myself in the E bracket. The red hair, part Irish.
Yeah.
Within this group, the sensible one, probably. Mm. It'd be fair to say on most occasions.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
Then the other two, I'll go with Minnie first. I would agree with Ali's turtle. See, the whole way through Entourage, Turtle's that kind of, he's just that sound guy, everybody's pal, just a cool person.
It's like crying here.
Everyone likes him. He'll do pretty much anything for his mates, which is something you would do as well.
Yeah.
I might start crying now as well, fucking hell. Ali.
Yes. Yes, John. As you're saying,
victory.
You guys are such fucking assholes.
No, do you know what? No, not in a bad way. Not in a bad way. Drama's an absolute.
Say something
legend.
Nice about me now.
I don't know, because drama's an absolute legend.
Make me cry.
You've got amazing calves. Hey,
real bro.
Any more than that to make me cry?
You play younger than you are.
Okay, right. I'll give you that.
No, you have a lot of drama qualities. It's,
I probably am drama though.
It's not easy to quantify it.
I remember before I even watched one episode, Minnie came up to me and went, "You're drama," and I went, "What? What did you just say? What did you just say to me?"
Excuse me.
And then I went in with that perception that was me. So probably from like day one, I was like, "That guy's not fucking me." But yeah, I think I can see where you're going.
He's a guy as well. He looks after his buddies.
Yeah,
he won't take it if anyone giving them shit. He's got their back. The episode where he comes in and socks Seth Green in the face.
Did he not hit Eminem as well?
No.
Punch him
exactly.
So, he's got his buddies' backs.
Sound? Okay, I like that one. Okay, I'm in. I'm drama now. I changed my answer.
Well, that's good because I would have said you were drama because I love you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, right, hold on a minute.
There's just so many mannerisms that he's got that are so similar to you. Like, and even the thing like with Keith when he goes to Vegas and he's got his own missus, I totally see that being something that you would do. Like every day you're like, oh, it's a great chance to relax. Like I brought you some California almonds and stuff like that. Like that would absolutely be something like you. And then I think there's another bit when Billy Walsh turns up at the airport and he's the guy's carrying his bag and he's like, oh, So you're taking a good wardrobe selection. I too like to have a selection when traveling abroad. And he's like, I've taken to ambient drama, you fruitcake. I just honestly, as soon as I was looking, I was like, I could just see that was just you. So I definitely go with that. Gemo, again, everything's been covered off. I think you're probably E. The sad thing is, I kind of see myself more as the Ari Gold as well. Just with, like, having a bit of pat and stuff, but being a bit of a prick.
A bit of a temper, you mean? A bit of a temper.
Yeah, both. That's it.
Both. So, yeah, that was as painful as you thought.
Host hangout is quite good. We're going to have to do this host hangout again, actually.
Yeah, do it.
Maybe get more questions next time.
Yeah. Get some more questions in a few episodes' time.
Yeah, sounds definitely good. Man, definitely. We've got the interview with Tam Cowan to look forward to. Yeah. So looking forward to getting put firmly in our places. As we take on this fucking Goliath of podcasting and radio and all that. What's all that media? That's what's cool.
Yeah. I feel like I need to put like my Braveheart like makeup on stuff. I just get ready for it, like angry looking. I don't know why I need to be angry, but I'm just gonna do it anyway.
Sell down,
takes me seriously.
So right, here we go.
Right, that's me gelled up, which means that I'm raring to go.
Excellent. Safety right, first. Safety first.
Absolutely.
I think we'll
flashbacks to a weird night before.
I'd like to introduce the next guest of the Back Bar podcast. Now, I have to admit, when Martin told me that we'd secured this guest, I actually told him to put the crack pipe down. But I am witnessing with my own eyes, comedian, host of comedy football show Off the Ball, newspaper critic, current affairs expert, a long life Motherwolf fan, lived through the lows and the mediocre highs, and my favourite quality, feud expert. Welcome to the show, Tam Cowan.
Welcome.
Well, the thanks intro is a lot of horse manure for a start. The first word you said was comedian, and I've always relished the fact that I have never, ever billed myself as a comedian, because I love the folk going, particularly social media, in the back of a show that you've done, in the back of a column that you've written, and they said, Cowan, comedian, I didn't, you know, and I said, whoa, I've never billed myself as a comedian. Started out doing a bit of writing, started out as a fairly young newspaper columnist, started out as a fairly young guy having my own radio show alongside Stuart, but in none of that time had ever described myself as a comedian. So if it so happens that I've ever said anything that has made anyone smile, we'll just treat it as a fluke and say that I enjoyed that. And as for food expert, I'll pick you up in that as well, because I'm back. After 21 years of doing food reviews in the newspapers, I've come back, bounced back Alan Partridge style with a podcast on food for the BBC called Scoff the Ball. But in the 21 years from 1998 to 2019 that I did restaurant reviews in the newspapers, I always stressed that I was a restaurant reviewer and not a food critic. And I always think there's a big difference, because I think a food critic should really know the industry inside out. They should know one artichoke from another. But I was always just a restaurant reviewer who, since the inception of me doing that gig, I was asked by an editor to go into restaurants as very much as Joe Blogs and just get into a restaurant the same way as anyone else would and look for the usual experience. So I'm not a restaurant critic either.
You know, two things for me, Tam. First of all, thank you so much for calling him out. It's about time Ali get put in his place. So thanks for that. And second of all, I'm just glad it is the real Tam Cowan, because obviously with social media these days, it's really hard to understand if you've got the right person. And there was a part of me that was really panicking that when you put your camera on, I was going to be met with a middle-aged guy in his pants eating Watsits with a Hulk mask on. So I'm really glad that I've actually got the real Tam Cowan.
That couldn't be me. I don't like Watsits.
No, that's good.
It is great to have you on as well. I think one of the good things about having you is that I got to do some YouTube creeping on you as well. So it's like you're getting to go to all the retro gigs. Like I didn't grow up in Scotland or anything, so I actually got to experience Tam Cowan live at was it the King's Theatre, I think it was.
All right, in Glasgow. Yeah,
that's it. So it's good, kind of just you going down that YouTube wormhole. Yeah, it was good fun.
And but you know, growing up in Scotland as well, a product, a snack product that I mentioned earlier, you might not even have heard the joke then about the guy that goes to the doctor and the doctor says, "What's wrong with you?" He says, "My cock has turned orange." And he says, "What?" He says, "My cock has turned orange." He says, "Give me a look at it." So the guy drops his strides and there he goes. He's got a big orange tadger. And the doctor says, "I can't work this out. What's happening?" He says, "What is it you do as a job?" He says, "Oh, I don't work." He says, "I just sit in the house all day eating Watsits and watching pornos." That's a great joke.
Well, I like how you're at the same level as us anyway. Yeah, the bar has been set.
At least we know we don't need to adjust our chat for the rest of this.
All I do really these, by the way, if I suddenly disappear, it means that one of you have asked, "So when did you start getting off the ball with Stuart?"
No.
Fucking asked that. No.
Oh, shite. Change my questions.
No, don't worry. We know it was 94. We know we've done our research, Tam.
You're wrong.
94
it was. 94, but no with Stuart.
No, that was right. That was with Sanjeev Kohli and Greg
Hemphill.
Hemphill, yeah.
Greg Hemphill, aye. Where are they now?
Exactly. How did that work out?
I'm doing a fucking podcast with three nomads. to sell out the hydro for 21 nights. I'm doing this fucking bit. I can't even get a carrot for it.
Oh, dear. Right, so Gail, you need to change your first question.
don't aggravate him as well.
Right, good, well, we get into the questions.
Let's get into the actual questions.
So, the first question is a little bit related to the question you don't want, but a little bit different. So, off the ball's been going, what's that, 27
26
years almost?
Years.
26. You see a lot of shows that don't last more than 5-10 years at a push. And given how the world is now compared to what it was in 1994, what's the kind of secret, do you think, to the longevity of Off the Ball, how it's managed to stay popular, stay relevant?
It stayed popular and relevant because Scottish football has stayed popular and relevant. And since day one, we've always been at the mercy of whatever's been in the papers. When we'd started with a show 4 or 5 years before the internet was a thing, then every day, I wish they still did, but everybody bought newspapers and you looked at the back pages, then you maybe read the paper for the front. And we just went on air at the weekend and tried to reflect for a fan's perspective what was happening. So the reason we've been able to last as long and hopefully keep it still sounding fairly fresh and lively and upbeat is because even though a lot of the format, we're always very careful, we don't tinker with the format. I mean, you get shows on radio like Just a Minute on Radio 4 that have lasted 50 plus years. You get things like I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue that have lasted, and we're very, very much the same framework, and we've worked around that framework. Even if I use something like our Team of the Week that we do every week, we've always had things that we will revisit on the show, but we've basically always been talking about different peoples, different clubs that have come to the fore. I mean, there we were, I'm just off air today, and we were talking about St Johnston and Livingston being in a National Cup final, and suddenly Livingston has got a different cast of characters, because this character, David Martindale, who thankfully is now deemed fit and proper, Here we have another cup final that's going to be played in front of no fans. So, this is a story that we can do now that we couldn't have done 4-10 years ago because fans were allowed into football. So as long as the news stories, as long as Scottish football is always evolving, even in these bleak times, then we'll always have plenty to talk about. And the two is, as you've seen already here, three, you're trying to get a word in edgewise, then thankfully me and Stuart, which is what a producer of a radio station wants, we'll always be able to talk the hind legs off a donkey. So I think that's what's kept it going. Well, we enjoy that's key. We enjoy doing it. We enjoy be honest, I don't want to be ever so slightly maudlin, but I had a couple of really big bereavements, both of them just before Christmas, and it was a bit of a kind of a hard time. My mum passed away and my father-in-law, who I was very close to, passed, particularly harsh as well, because I'd fucking bought both their Christmas presents, right? That was a real choker. Incidentally, the receipt. Any of you boys can give me a price for 100 gift wrapped Lambert and Butler. You're more than welcome, right? Take 40 quid. But all kidding aside, that was two big bereavements I had. And I was, you know, a wee bit down in the dumps. And my wife, both our nearest and dearest family members passed away on the Friday, just a week between each other, December 11th, December the 18th. And in both cases, my wife said, "Are you really wanting to go in and do the radio on this Saturday?" But you know what? I couldn't wait because I enjoy doing the radio, and I know that would immediately have given me a wee pickup, and it made me feel a wee bit better. And I was in a very privileged position of being the co-host of a national radio show where I was able to almost pay my respects to both people on air. And but with me and Stuart being me and Stuart, when my mum passed, that immediately Stuart says, "Tam, how do you feel about one of the subjects we'll do in Off the Ball?" And I knew it sounded like an Off the Ball classic. He said, "The great Scottish mammy, what is it you'll never forget about your old mammy?" And that appealed to folk of different generations, whether they still live with their mammy. Their mammy might, as we get some folk who their mammy was still running them to school, you know, whereas we got other folk that remembered their dearly departed mammy. And it was all about their quirks and the wee funny things that they said and did. Mm. And it was a brilliant kind of antidote, if you like, to the grief that I had been feeling. So, you know, that's what I like about Off the Ball, and that's why I think it's lasted, that we enjoy it. We enjoy coming in to our so-called work, which I never call work. That's another point, boys. I would never leave the studio on a Saturday. Let's say in the normal days when we were able to go to the football, I mean, if it hadn't been for COVID, instead of speaking to you guys now, we would have rearranged, because right after the show, I'd have been heading out to Motherwell to go to the Motherwell St Johnston game. But I've never, when I did in the past, leave the radio and go to the football. I never edged into my seat in row D, the Phil O'Donnell stand, and say to my pals, "Oh, I've just come from my work."
Shite day at work. Shite day at work.
Absolutely. They would kick my head in after they've knocked their pan in all week and sitting in their office or whatever weird and wonderful jobs my pal day. So that's the other part of it, because you always say, if you enjoy what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. And that's particularly true if what you enjoy doing is heroin.
That's a different type of danger.
You'll never work a day in your life, trust me.
That's one of the things about just when you were saying about the old Scottish mammy thing and how it appeals to different generations of people. We were talking about this earlier, that the programme appeals to all the generations. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about, well, me and Martin, obviously we grew up in Scotland, not the little African kid with us. We grew up, like, I'd come home from playing rugby on a Saturday morning, sitting having lunch with my dad, mom, and Off the Ball was on every week without a doubt, and then still listen to it now, and it's like, it doesn't have just a kind of niche demographic or anything, it just appeals to everybody. No. Yeah.
Well, first things first, that's you in a yellow card for mentioning rugby. secondly, no, you're absolutely correct. Once upon a time, the greatest, and it still happens, the greatest... you know, kind word that I got thrown in my direction about Off the Ball was when women would come up to me in a bar, in a restaurant, in a supermarket, in the street, and they'd say to me, classic thing that if I had a penny for every time I heard it, I'd be a rich man. They would come up and they would say, "Tam, I hate Fatma. I don't like Fatma at all, but I love listening to Off the Ball." And that's a great accolade, because we try to aim it at a widespread audience. And indeed, that is why I can be absolutely candid about this. I'm not talking out of turn. I know for a fact, because we found this out. That is why Professor Jason Leach has been on Off the Ball since March 2020, because his superiors and indeed the Scottish government knew that in terms of him coming on to a show like ours, because we do historically have a very wide demographic, we knew then that Professor Jason Leach would be getting his message out there to a wide range of people. And he might not necessarily get that on another radio show. So it was a good pick for him.
It's a ringing endorsement for you as well, though. It's a ringing endorsement to have, you know, the government selecting your show as somewhere that they feel that they can reach the widest audience as well. Yeah.
It is a great accolade, and we've tried. I mean, don't get me wrong, like anybody else doing what we do, you get your trolls, you know, and we would folk. Mm. And we thought, oh, well, away you go. We don't need you. We would thought, oh, this is now the Jason Leach show. And we say, no, it's no. The man gets half an hour on a Saturday out of the 4 hours that we do Saturday and Sunday. And all the input, if me and Stuart don't ask him a single question, we're happy with that. All the input comes from the listeners. The listeners send in the questions. And it's listeners as well, to go back to the demographic thing. It's listeners who maybe don't necessarily, like I do, I'm a bit of an anorak with COVID. I record every daily briefing. And if I don't watch them live, I'll watch them later on at night. But no, everybody taps into that. A lot of people think politics in any shape or form is a turn off, so they don't watch that. But if they tune into Off the Ball, it means that the message for Professor Leach is still able to permeate.
Yeah,
and if they want, they can ask him any question they so desire. So yeah, we enjoy having them on, but you know, we clearly wish and we'll rejoice in the day when we don't have them on, because that'll mean that this is all over.
Yeah, exactly. Talking of, when Ali mentioned in his introduction there that obviously Off the Ball and then the TV shows, the newspaper columns, obviously working across all three kind of genres of media, what's your favourite one to do? Is it the Off the Ball stuff? Or
no, I'll tell you, I could write. Well, first up, I had 9 really good years doing main show on the telly. So I would say financially, I'll not lie to you, financially the telly is always going to be better, right? That money was superb. And indeed, as my butler who's holding up my phone here, so I can do this.
Is that Jordan that was there earlier? Right? Just paid me hold the phone up. Him.
But no, the telly was good for money, so let's be very Scottish about it and get into brass tacks. But in terms of what I enjoy, I would undoubtedly say the radio. And the reason for that being, the radio is very, very, it's very live, it's very now, very happening. Another thing is as well, if heaven forfend, if I somehow manage to sleep in a Saturday and get out my scratcher very late and only made it to the BBC in time for our opening theme, and I hadn't even got time to get dressed, if I was sitting there in my pyjamas, we could still do an edition of Off the Ball. We could still do it. You couldn't do that with telly. Telly is so time consuming, and it's a lot of effort and time goes into it. Off the Ball as well, it means that, and we've had many an instance of it, when you can react to things that happen there and now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're live in the radio, if we suddenly get word that something big has happened, there's been a decision taken about something in Scottish football, or indeed, I like talking about JFK moments in the radio, which Stuart always ridicules me about. a couple that we had recently. We were on a month or so before Christmas, when the news broke, when we were live on air, so we were able to record to tell the nation that Sean Connery had passed away. That had only just been announced, so we get the word right away and we brought it out. And we built it into the show about Sean Connery. Who did he really support? Did Tokyo support Hearts, Celtic, Rangers? Yeah. He was pals with David Murray. We were able to work that into the fabric of the show. And again, just last Saturday, as I talked to you now, a dear old pal of mine, Sidney Devine, passed away last week, and I get the word direct from his family, if you like, on live on air, and I was able to just kind of tell our listeners that this great Scottish iconic figure had sadly passed away. So that, in a slightly macabre sense, is one of the joys of being on live radio, that you can just react to stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the thing with Sidney Devine, obviously you and him were quite close pals, so obviously it must have been a really hard thing to hear that he'd passed away, but at the same time it also gives you a chance to pay a bit of tribute and kind of share stories that you and him have encountered that maybe other people don't know about as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you were able immediately to turn it around to add a couple of stories about, and again, this is me using my experience, turning it around to football. Me and Sidney have been two of the guests at John Boyle, the former Motherwell chairman, has been guests at his wedding in Hamilton, Bermuda in 2008. I was kind of best man stroke MC John and his wife Donna, they'd both been married and that before, so it wasn't a walking down the aisle to the church organist sort of wedding. It was more like a big, big, giant party that lasted 3 days. So John had asked me to kind of MC all the stuff, and Sydney was one of the cabaret acts. So I was immediately to recall some of the stories about that event and the other FITMA guys that were there, blah, 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 whilst paying my wee tribute to Sydney. But again, only able to do that because we were live on air. And and indeed, as we'd been a couple of weeks earlier, when we were minutes from going live on air, and suddenly the roof of the BBC went on fire. We had an electrical fire. And we had to wait outside the building in the freezing bloody cold. Me and Stuart hung our jackets on Judith Ralston, let's just say that. It was very cold. We were able to, when we came back into the BBC, after getting all clear for the fire service, they had flicked a switch at the BBC for about 11:45 when everybody was evacuated and gone straight to Radio 5 Live. We were meant to be on between 12 and 2, but we didn't get on to 1 o'clock, so we had a wee abridged show. But we talked to the listeners about how we'd been evacuated, etc. You didn't hide it for him. We made a virtue of it.
Aye, that's cool. That's it makes it a lot more relatable, doesn't it? You know, like it's not, you know, like these execs in a way in a studio somewhere, it's like their pals they're talking to. Aye.
Television's absolutely a bit more manufactured.
Absolutely. And what else is a big help for us? I'm even looking, obviously, in the world we've got 11 of you three guys isolating for one another. You've all got your own techie equipment there. Joy of joys with me and Stuart in the 20, well, in fact, we're into year 27 of Off the Ball. I never once have had to press a button or hit a switch or put a fader up or anything like that. The joy of being with the BBC is that they've got sound engineers and producers for all that stuff, and it means that all you have to concentrate on is what you're saying into the microphone, which is, honestly, it might sound fairly trivial, guys, but it's a huge bonus when you can just focus on the job at hand. Makes it, you know, it's a big, big help.
I can imagine. And I guess across the span of your career on radio, TV, etc., you've interviewed and had plenty of famous guests or whatever. Who's been the most interesting person you've met in that time then?
Well, when you say interesting, and you said it almost slightly solemnly, it takes me a guy that was utterly fascinating. He'd been there and done it in the football front, and as a human being, he's a guy that I'll never forget. It was Emlyn Hughes, the former Liverpool England captain. We get Emlyn on offside one Monday night. We had booked him, and then it was in the interim period between us booking him for a show later in that series, and I'm coming up to the BBC in Glasgow to do the show. He, and then we, the world at large, had learned that he'd an inoperable brain tumour. And we thought, right, okay, what do we do here? So our producer phoned him back and obviously passed on everybody's thoughts, and we were really sorry. And, you know, saying, Emlyn, if you don't obviously need to come up to Glasgow, you want to spend your time, I'm sure, with your friends and family, etc. But no, he said, no, I'd booked the show, I'd love to come up. I had a great deal of affection for Scotland in my playing career. It was a real love-hate relationship. Used to always get pelters for the Tartan Army and all the rest of it. And he says, no, I would love to come up. So Emlyn came up to do the show. And it was brilliant. And when I went in to see him, I remember I was quite hesitant, and it was a kind of awkward thing when he came up. I went into his wee dressing room just to introduce myself. He had no reason to know who I was, of course, as he was continually based in England, and that's where he did all his stuff. And I know I can't get arrested south of Gretna, that's fine. So I went into his dressing room to see him, and it was a bit like, hi, Emlyn, how are you doing? I'm Tam Cowan, I'm the host of the show. Really sorry to hear what you've been through. Oh, Tam, no, it's fine. What's the audience like tonight? Are they all up for it and stuff? I said, yeah, absolutely. Don't you worry about that. But all he was doing when I walked in, I can still see him. He's like kind of reading glasses on the edge of his nose, and he was flicking through a wee book, which I'm pretty sure was his maybe wee stories and stuff that he'd maybe done after dinner. Speeches from and stuff like that. So he was looking through a wee stories to remind himself. When he came on and was introduced to the audience, it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, they remembered him so fondly when he was a very colourful, giggly character on A Question of Sport. Mm-hmm. And for the older guys that were in the audience, they remembered him as being an absolutely brilliant football player for Liverpool and England. So he was great. And the wonderful thing that we learned, two things. First up, he told us a cracking story that I still tell to this day. He said that to the audience, when we're out there in front of the live audience, he said that his favourite memory of the Tartan Army, he says that he was playing, it was the day of an England-Scotland game at Wembley, and he said that as the England team bus was driving for the hotel to Wembley Stadium, he said he saw a sight he'll never forget. He said he saw a member of the Tartan Army in the full regalia sticking the head on the England team bus, right? And he says, Tam, he says, Tam, the incredible thing was, he says, the bus was doing 70 miles an hour at the time. So that was his way of summing up the madness of the Tartan Army and that. But here was the lovely thing that night. What used to happen, if your guests coming up for England, we'd loads, whether it was Jim Bowen or Matt Letizzi or Kevin Keegan, Graham Taylor, we had loads of guests that came up from down south. And the norm was, because we did the show on the Monday night and we did it as live, we started right. the recording maybe about 8 o'clock and we tried to keep it to half an hour. So we didn't ever arse about, you know what I mean? We battered on and get into the show and did it as well we could in our allocated time. But the guests then, it was still a Monday night, so what invariably happened with the guests, which led to some great nights out. The guests, when they were coming up for England or even further afield, they would obviously be offered overnight accommodation on the BBC wee hotel locally, and they'd get maybe a flight or a train back down the next day. And that, as I say, led to some great nights out. Like, there was a wee bar that we used to go to in Byers Road. I can name it because it's no longer there. It's now a wee Indian restaurant. But it was a place just near Ashton Lane in Glasgow, next to the Hillhead Underground. It was a wee bar called Bonham's that for years had been a firm favourite with folk for the old BBC anyhow up at Queen Margaret Drive. But what we ended up doing in any pub on a Monday night, if you're, he's old enough to remember pubs, aye?
The good old days.
So, like any pub on a Monday night, they loved a bit of business. At the start of the week, you know. So after we'd always had a few drinks with the guests in the green room at the BBC, maybe around about 10 o'clock, we'd walk 5 minutes down the road to Bonham's and Byers Road, and the bar staff had been there. Oh, brilliant, Tam, in you come. Who you got with you tonight? And we'd been in there in the past with all these weird and wonderful people. Like, we were in there for a drink with the Proclaimers. We were in there with Graham Taylor, the former England boss. We were in there with Kelly Dalglish, Kenny's daughter. Nice. We were in there with Paolo Nattini. The lassies that worked in the bar were going mental. We had great, great social nights, and we invariably, that's why I'm pointing out the bar is no longer there, because we maybe get the wee lock-in for time to time. You know?
Nice.
Put the blinds down. And, you know, we were maybe a wee bit later than we should have been, but we weren't misbehaving. A wee late drink, that was all. But what we're saying about these guests then, Emlyn Hughes had to get back down the road that night, and he lived at that time in his life in Sheffield. To be honest with you, it was quite poignant. It was only a matter of weeks later, doing Offside, was that he did sadly pass away. But he really enjoyed himself. But then the cherry in the cake, I loved his Tartan Army story, but the thing I'll always remember Emlyn Hughes for, we had to get him back down the road that night. So we booked a private car, BBC booked a private car to take him back down to Sheffield, a fair old run. Yeah. And the story got back to us from the driver that when he took Emlyn Hughes down to his home, by this time, after he'd sat with us and had a few drinks, it was something like 4 o'clock in the morning, 4 in the morning. And Emlyn, the driver, was saying, right, pleasure talking to you on the road down, Mr. Hughes, all the way back up the road. Emlyn Hughes says, no, not a chance. He said, I've already texted my wife when we headed, when we left Glasgow. She's done up the spare room. You're coming in with me so you know you can get a good sleep. And then if you drive all that road back up, we'll get your breakfast and everything when you're up in the morning. And then you can go back on your way. So he's an absolute
that's
gem.
Magic. Yeah.
And that's the story that I always remember about Emlyn Hughes.
Yeah, I love that one. Just when you were talking about the Scotland-England, got the the Euros coming up, big game on the 18th of June. And even the other day, I saw your pal Ali McCoist sharing a clip of his goal against Switzerland from Euro 96. That was an absolute screamer of a goal. Do you think we've got a chance of a decent team doing something?
Yeah, because, well, I think certainly against England, I mean, I don't, thinking back, I'm sure we went into that last high profile England game, the two each. If memory serves, I don't think a lot of folk gave Scotland a chance that day.
And then goals from Lee Griffiths, isn't it?
The proverbial ball here away for getting a famous victory when Lee Griffiths put in the two free kicks before Harry Kane spoiled it for us. So, a case of rising to the occasion. I mean, England, we all know England, they've got a smashing team, you know, and some great players in that team. But I'm quietly confident about it. I just really hope that there will be fans here. I mean, bringing it right up, you know, there was in the papers today as I speak to you, from the BBC on Saturday, February the 20th, reports today from Sadiq Khan, the London mayor, saying that he's confident that the Tartan Army will be down at Wembley for that game on June the 18th. And I certainly hope so. And I'd love to be there myself. Because when you think back, I can assure you there was no two guys celebrating in a more frenetic style than me and Stuart Cosgrove when we won the penalty shootout in Serbia. Because if I put this scenario to you boys, when we started doing off the ball together, right, I had my wee year, as I say, with Sanjeev and Greg Hemphill. The following year when me and Stuart hooked up, 1995, 12 months later, we were down on off the ball duty at Euro 96 in England, put up in a hotel down there, for the best part, 2.5 weeks, doing shows every night, going to the games. 2 years later, we were whisked over to France 98, right? Okay. 3 weeks in France, travelling about Paris, Bordeaux, Saint-Étienne, staying in the hotels, doing shows every night. And me and Stuart, in the back of those two tournaments, we thought, wow, hey, this is great. This is this is going to happen every
time. Can't wait for the next one.
Want to watch here.
Checking into rehab soon.
Absolute zip since then. So we were hoping and praying the minute David Marshall saved that penalty that we would be going to England for the biggie against Wembley. And of course, don't get me wrong, we don't need, I've probably got essential travel drummed into my head through Professor Leakes, but we'll no need to be at Hampden, for the two games there. We could do our show before the game and then watch the game on the telly. That's fine for me. But I would love to be at Wembley and I'd love to see the Tartan Army in full voice, which I reckon fans of any club, I don't know what you three feel about this. We had a discussion a couple of weeks ago. I reckon there will be a spike in football attendances when we're allowed back
big
in.
Time. Oh,
it might not last forever. It might just be a novelty again. Stuart was a wee bit more cynical. He thinks that people might even have got used to watching football in a format like this on a screen.
You can't replace being there live. You can't
replace that stadium.
So,
I would mention attendances at other sports going up, but I don't want to get myself a second yellow. So,
It was probably summed up best for me by a true story that I was told by a Motherwell fan. Sits a couple of rows behind me, and I couldn't repeat this for obvious reasons on the radio. But I can chuck it in with you guys.
Don't worry about us.
Very, very funny. A guy says to me, he says, "I'm choking, Tam. I'm choking to get back to the FUTBA." And he says, and that's quite a bold statement, Tam. He says, "If you know that cunt that sits next to me." And this is clearly a guy who is annoyed by the luck of the draw about somebody that sits. It must be one of these guys that's the expert in the stands that shouts out all kinds of nonsense. Day after day, game after game, and that guy's saying that no matter how much of an idiot this boy is, he would love to see him again.
I miss him. Be good. Plus we'll get Declan Gallagher leading the charge from the back as well. That'll be good to see a Motherwell boy.
Absolutely.
That'd be good.
He's playing amazing.
I know.
He's been great, and I must say as well, I think he's earned his place. I've only said this a similar thing about two players. I thought that when Declan Gallagher gets into the Scotland team, I said at the time, I think it'll be a hard job to budge him You know, and that effectively has come to fruition. Another person I say that about just now, because I was a big, big fan. I watched him coming through the ranks at Motherwell, and I'm delighted he gave us what could be life-saving money, courtesy of Celtic, £3.2 million.
Turnbull.
David Turnbull. Yeah, I said at the time, it was David Turnbull gets his chance in that Celtic team, which, you know, only up to a couple of years ago has been lauded, having an embarrassment of riches in midfield. But I still did say that when Turnbull gets into the team, they're not going to be able to budge him. And I think he's been brilliant.
He's been Celtic's best player just now. Absolutely best player.
I'd be amazed if he's not in the Scotland squad for the Euros, actually.
Yeah, we can just hope and pray that we get fans back into, even into our pub to watch it would be good again, just to get a wee bit of atmosphere again. But
no, absolutely, and it will come. But you know, the funny thing is, and we brought it up on our show again today, for the 22,000 house parties that have been logged by Police Scotland, 22,000 house parties. The people that are going to these house parties are the people that are going to stop the rest of us getting back to the football. And the daft thing is, the people going to the house parties, this is where the stupidity of it lies. The people going to house parties, they don't actually want to go to a house party. These are the people who want to go to pubs and nightclubs and go to the dancing. But they're not going to be able to go to these places if they don't stop going to house parties and spreading the bloody virus, you know. Exactly. And that's what makes the rest of us very, very angry. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the company of other people. I've been very lucky in life. I've led a very, very active social life. I love going out and about. I love going to the pub. I love meeting up with pals. I love going to restaurants. Mm. And I'm really, really, really missing it. But I can quite happily sit in the house with my wife, with my wee lassie, watching films, putting on old episodes of Cheers and Alan Partridge and Only Fools and Horses when they go to their kit, sitting there with a bottle of wine, which, interestingly, for the publicans and restaurateurs who might have a battle in their hands when their doors reopen, a good bottle of wine only costs £6.50 out of Asda, which I would be charged fucking £30 for. When the restaurants reopen and the pubs, they're going to have to think about that. And they're also going to think about, I enjoy a wee gin from time to time. They're also going to have to think about guys like me who buy a gin in a pub after lockdown, and you take a wee sip it and you say, there's no fucking gin in that, you know, because we're not used now to the house measures.
The house measures, so, aye.
Talking of gin, you should give this one a try at some point.
What's that one?
Garden Shed Gin.
All right, from it's a
Glasgow one.
Glasgow boys, yeah.
Just give it a shot sometime.
It's right. Well, listen, Tam, I'm conscious of the time and I don't want to hold you up for the Motherwell St Johnson game, so we're going to just jump into our speed round. We'll jump into our speed round now, just before we get finished. So I think John's going to lead us off this week.
John, before you go on that, the pressing question that we had there as well, is we actually sat and had a chat on Thursday before you came on, and we're all interested to know how wild is Ali McCoist on a night out?
He's good. It's may have been lunches that develop into nights out.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
One of them was when Ali was at, it was a daily record lunch back in the day, but Ali didn't get top billing at it. Ali was there, but the top billing that day, I spoke about it when we were doing our tributes to him when he passed away recently. But Jim McLean, who had a column in the Daily Record, the column that packs a punch when he did his wee altercation back in the day with a BBC reporter. Jim McLean was at the lunch that day. And the two stories that stand out was that Jim McLean at this lunch was miles away for the way he'd been perceived. He was sitting there laughing, joking the whole day. He was loving everybody's funny stories and jokes. And to the point that Jim McLean said, he turned me and Stuart were there. And he turned to us at one point, and it was great. He says, I'll have to get back up the road now and put my cheeks in the fridge. And it was great. He just says he'd been enjoying himself too much.
He's brilliant.
And Ali had been at that lunch. And I remember that it was one of the lunches that ended up into a wee evening shot. And Ali was good. But you know the interesting thing? Ali's brilliant company. And only the few occasions I've been in his company. But I think Ali's smart enough to be clever on a night out. You know what I mean by that? We've all seen footballers that have ended up in the front pages of the paper.
Aye,
If you think back, Ali hasn't really ever
caught up
in any of that stuff. I think he's getting the nouse to know not to do it.
Yeah. Aye.
He looks like a good guy to go out for a pint with him.
Aye, he'd be good to get a wee beer, but
he's first in my list. I was at a place, like, in case any of his potential stalkers are watching us, I won't give the precise location away, but I was with a pal who lives in Ali's kind of vicinity. I'd met that last time. Remember, there was that time, was it late summer, early autumn, when we kind of could go out and do normal
things,
pubs and restaurants.
Yeah.
I think you'd finish at 10 o'clock, though. Anyway, I met up with David Sweeney, my mate, down in his neck of the woods, and we went to a pub there. And while I was waiting on Davey to arrive, I had got a pint of, what's the beer now? I think it begins H-double-E here.
Hey, Heverly.
Heverly,
yeah. Heverly, right. And I'm not really a big beer drinker, but I fancied something to quench my thirst, and I had Heverly there. So, this pint that the boy poured me, he just sat it then down in front of me,
right.
And I just took a wee photo of it, because it looked this beautiful, frothy, gassy pint, and I stuck a wee picture of it up my Instagram. I've turned into an old sweetie wife with Instagram. I spend fucking way too much time on it, right? It's embarrassing. You know how you get that wee notification? I get it on a Monday. It tells you how long you were on your phone last week.
Aye.
Your average screen time last week, I got it once. Your average screen time last week was 9 hours, 20 minutes.
Shift. That's a full shift.
I'm trying to cut back, right? Well, I put up this photo. It is absolutely... It was a wee 5-second video, right? It is lovely, gassy, frothy, tiny, heavily. And Ali McCoist was the first person to respond. He put it up on Instagram, but he sent a wee text as well. And he says, ask for the... You boys were seeming the beer experts there. He said, you should have asked for the... And it was something like the Jacarnelli or Jacarna. Jacka, a beer beginning with Jacka. It's a dark beer.
All right, okay.
Anyhow,
that was a lucky guess, Tam. We're no experts.
The place I was in was Ali's local as well. He goes into it as well, unbeknownst to me.
Right.
So anyway, cut a long story short, me and Ali made a wee pact that night that I would take him back in there for a drink, because there's a cracking curry house just across the road for it, where we went that night as well. And I said, right, Ali, when all this madness is over and you can nae rules, we'll meet up and I'll get you a pint of your favourite brew in here, then I'll take you for a curry. So me and Ali, night out, the minute
first
lockdown
night
is over.
That sounds
close. I don't think I've got any plans for that night either.
Limited to two, Ali. Sorry, mate. You can't
is it?
Table for two only.
Cool. Right, should we get into the speed round? So again, Birch Fibres, we're getting rattling through this time. Counties in, so again, we'll 3, 2, 1, let's go.
Okay, best Scottish footballer you've seen?
Davy Cooper.
Favourite holiday destination?
Las Vegas.
Nice. Book or movie?
Movie.
What would be your alternative career?
The only proper job I've had was a window cleaner. That's true. It was at the summer of the Mexico World Cup 1986, and I inherited the window cleaning round in our scheme from one of my mates who had outgrown it. And I started off as an apprentice to a one-arm window cleaner. I was the apprentice to a one-arm window cleaner. I used to stand at the bottom of his ladder and wring out his cloth for him.
That's one of the best stories I've ever heard. Right, next. Pizza or pasta?
Oh, pizza.
Text or phone call?
I'm ashamed to say text. It's a lot easier.
Who would play you in the movie of your life?
Probably Zac Efron.
Yeah. I was going to just say Zac, actually.
Or Pauline Quack from Bird Of A Feather. Might know him. Apparently I look like a darts player. Bunting, is that his name?
I'm going to need to Google him.
Yeah.
Google him and you'll see. We'll Google after. Sam was right. The minute the darts is on the telly, always get guys saying, Tom get beat 6-3 the day. This guy Bunting. He's basically a fat bastard with specs.
Stephen Bunton, his name is.
Oh, you've done already. You go. Good man, Stephen Bunton.
Right, in that case, we'll stick with Zac Efron, though.
I need to take my specs off.
Dogs or cats?
Oh, dogs. I've got a wee dog, wee Maltese, Casper. Oh, he's my wee son. I've got a daughter. So Casper's my son.
Starter or dessert?
Oh, as much as I love my food, boys, anybody that knows me will tell you, I'm not a big sweet hon, so definitely starter. I'm not mad about dessert. The only dessert I've ever ordered, if it's good ice cream, plain ice cream, I don't want a Kool-Aid on top, I don't want sauce, I don't want a mint leaf, I just want good ice cream in a bowl.
No sticky toffee so pudding.
last question, England or anyone else?
Well, I don't buy into that. The thing about hating the English for the sake of, there's too many things about England that I love. The Lake District, Fawlty Towers, Ricky Gervais, John Cleese, Mike Reed, the former comedian, so I don't, but I do reserve the right when I'm watching England in a sporting occasion. I do reserve the right to have warmer feelings towards their opponents.
It's very weird. I get the same thing, Tam, and I feel as though I've all of a sudden developed Croatian relatives.
But you know what? I would like to think my life. I don't. You get accused, you can't, when you do a show like ours or whatever, and you're writing in papers, I don't tell you, you hate him or you hate that club.
Aye.
I don't hate anybody. When it comes to, and this ties in with accusations, who do you really support? Oh, for fuck's sake, guys. I think I spent, what is it now, 42 years worth of money on Motherwell season tickets to cover my ass.
Just as a facade.
That's
commitment to it.
As far as it goes with Celtic and Rangers, we'll get accused of being a Celtic fan if, let's say, in recent times, Celtic have been rotten, they've collapsed, and you do jokes about Celtic, then it'll be, I might have known for Cowan, blue nose bastard. And then Rangers, Fagan back to 2012, and them ending up playing Peter Head in the league opener back in, in that bizarre episode in Scottish football. Yeah. Then, of course, they were easy pickings, and then you'd be accused of being a Celtic man. It's garbage.
True. If we're going back to the off the ball stuff, that's one of the best things about it is the fact that you're a Motherwell fan and Stuart Cosgrove's a St Johnson fan. So there's
your battle today.
Well, isn't any of that old points.
To bring the chat full circle, as you started asking about that, and you did say, why has it lasted so long? I think that is a key reason. When me and Stuart were almost forced together, I hadn't met Stuart until the morning of our first off the ball together, August 1995. We never met each other. I knew Stuart from the odd bit of media that he'd done. He'd written in the book, brilliant book, Hamden Babylon, by this point, which I had a cherished copy of. And I saw him popping up maybe some late night arty shows on BBC Two and all that, right? Stuart only knew me at that point from flying back up to London on tele duty into Glasgow on a Monday and picking up maybe the Evening Times where I had my first ever columns in. So Stuart knew about me for that. I knew about him for the stuff he'd done, but they put us together in 95. And the reason I think it worked is that as much as we might appear and we play it up, it's been poles apart. I mean, Stuart branded us with a word, incidentally, that you could not use on the BBC. You couldn't use it in modern life now if you get any fucking sense. But back in the day, I hasten to add, around about 1995, 96, Stuart branded the pair of us. I was the coarse lump of Lanarkshire lard, and Stuart branded himself as the posh Perthshire poof. If you use that word now, of course, as you'll appreciate, boys, that's you three will all be media savvy. That's just a word you couldn't use now. Stuart used it back in the day, self-deprecatingly when talking about himself. But the very fact, as it turns out, and this is the reason it worked, when me and Stuart got to know each other, even that very first day, we and just chatting, we had a lot of parallels growing up. Stuart grew up in a relatively poor housing scheme in Perth, and I grew up with a very, very much working class background and a scheme in Motherwell. So there was a wee bit of resonance there. And of course, the big thing, we both supported what we like to call a wee diddy club. Stuart with St Johnston, me with Motherwell. And that meant you always had the big teams, the big guys, particularly Celtic and Rangers. You always had them in your sights. And I think that balance in the show, particularly when you're then appealing, that's why it worked for a national audience, because when we're aiming at our Broth fans who loved, rather than mainstream media back in the day, kind of basically arse-licking Celtic and Rangers, you know, turning up. You remember, you'll have seen this in news and sports programmes.
Yeah.
A reporter turning up at Henrik Larsson's door with a birthday cake because it's his birthday. Oh, that nonsense, right? But we were able to pitch the shows embracing our Broth fans, Queen of the South fans, Brechin City fans, and bringing them in. But we had, you know, as I say, Celtic and Rangers. The reason, if somebody put a gun to my head, I would never say that I hate Celtic or Rangers. I'd be lying for a start, because Celtic and Rangers, whether I was doing the radio, the telly, or writing newspaper columns, they have always, always offered me so much material, because they create so much of the news. You know, and if somebody has fallen foul of the law or done something a bit stupid, if it's a Brechin City player, they would tend to get away with it. If it's a Celtic or Rangers player, you know, they would end up in the front pages. Guys like me would be able to have a wee bit of fun about it. So I thank Celtic and Rangers for their very existence, because they create so much material.
Brilliant. Okay. That's been really eye-opening. Really good.
It's 8 minutes past three. If you've got any updates on the scores.
Any updates on the scores? Who are you wanting to know? Just the only game that matters, Tim.
Well, you can might as well tell us the off-the-ball derby. How's it going?
Off-the-ball derby. 2 seconds. Let me get into this.
See,
we've not missed anything yet.
No, that's 5-0. Fucking hell.
5-0 at St Johnston, Tam. So you're not missing anything. No, we're 0-0. 9 minutes.
0-0.
There you go.
Perfect.
Well, Tam, thank you so much.
No, you're absolutely welcome, boys. Good luck with it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend. Take care, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, that's all we've time for the back bar this week. We're back again in a couple of weeks' time with our next guest. Until then, like, share, subscribe, and all that good stuff, and we'll be back tickling your ears again soon. Cheers.